Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, it's Justine.
And I'm Jenna.
Welcome to the Same Brain Podcast. Let's roll that intro before we introduce our guest. Oh my goodness. Okay. I'm so hyped. Are you hyped?
I am. Not only that the podcast is back, but that we have a very, very special guest. Because I thought you were going to pick up there.
We have Ben Moon. Woo! Oh my gosh. Okay. So I was thinking, I'm like, how do I even introduce you? Because there's so many things that you've done and that you do. I was like, rock climber, surfer, author, dog dad,
photographer,
videographer. I mean, the list goes on and on, and also cancer survivor, which is incredibly impressive. Okay. I didn't even let you speak yet, but we're here at Condo and we first met there.
Yeah. But now let's let Ben talk.
Yeah. Let's let Ben.
It's really good to see you both. The best thing is how we met, which was my wonderful dog, Nori. This was in Sun River 3 years ago, which feels like a decade ago because of everything that's happened in the world. I drove from the coast to the mountains and rolled in super late, and I was late for dinner, and I was scrambling and trying to find a seat, and Nori just like beelined for your table and would not leave and was laying under your table.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Nori was like under my chair, and I was like, I feel like the chosen one. I was like, this is the best day of my life.
It was so great. And that was such a fun event, too.
Dogs are the best icebreakers. I've met some of my dearest friends through Nori and Denali in the past, too. So.
She's so sweet. Do you want to give like a quick intro to our audience about like what you do and you know how you found yourself here at Condo?
I've been involved with Sony for about 8 years. I'm an artisan of imagery for them, and I'm a filmmaker, photographer. I was an adventure photographer first and kind of became a filmmaker and had a film about my previous dog, Denali, that went crazy viral and then wrote a book about it, which has now been optioned to be a Hollywood film, which is kind of exciting. I really enjoy being a part of this family that they've kind of created, and these events are always overwhelming because there's so many people I want to catch up with, and I'm just glad we have a time to just sit and chat for a moment in quiet.
Yeah, thank you. And if you guys are watching, we do also do a video podcast, and we're in Sun Valley, Idaho. It's so beautiful out, and I thought that would be so cool if we filmed outside, but it's so hot.
It's so hot. It's like in the 90s. The UV level was too high, so we're in the air conditioned, taking it easy.
Yeah, we're at 6,000 feet, which isn't that high, but it's high enough where the sun feels a lot hotter, and then you know, about 5 p.m. it just gets really cold again. So the temperature swings are real here.
It's wild. So we're inside, and this is probably not like the best showcase of what these cameras can do, but we're here and I'm just so excited. You know, we first met at Condo and now we're here and you're on our podcast, which is very exciting. I guess for you, kind of like, where do you feel like your adventure kind of started?
I never was trained in photography or filmmaking. I went to school for sports medicine, and I was living in Oregon, and a bunch of relationship heartbreak, you know, life changes happened, and I couldn't find a job in my field that I really felt like it suited me. And right before everything kind of life imploded, this is my mid-20s, I bought a used film setup. I think it was the Nikon N90S. I want to say three now because everything's threes and fours and fives on the Sony kit. But this is in 99 or 2000. I just had this feeling that I wanted to buy a camera. I'd buy a camera and start taking real photos because I'd had a little Yashica T4, mm-hmm. which are now one of the hardest cameras to find. I lived down the road with my dog, Denali, and at first I was living out of the back of a Subaru wagon, and then I bought a camper van, and it wasn't really planned. I was just trying to figure out my life, and I was rock climbing throughout the West and started taking photos. This climbing manufacturer in Bend, I laid some on the side table and was like, hey, what do you think? And I started digging through his submissions from all the other outdoor adventure photographers and basically saw a cover letter and a sheets of slides and how the other people submitted slides. And it sounds so archaic now because it was literally you just send in your original photo and you never knew if you'd see it again. You never knew if the lab would like cut it in half by accident. But Patagonia ended up using a few of my images, and then I was like, wait, maybe this could be more than just a hobby. Climbing was my biggest passion then, but I also felt like it was sort of a selfish pursuit in some ways, and I wanted to just somehow find more meaning to it. And so being able to document the people that I was spending time with and the people I loved, it felt natural. That's kind of how it all started. And it's been interesting to see the going from film to digital to everybody going to motion and then to, you know, social media, like the Instagram side. But now we're kind of like, what's next and trying to figure that out. So it's been a really interesting journey through all that.
Right. Yeah. And I feel like we were also in the NFT chat here at Condo. And, yes. And it's crazy just to see how quickly things have changed. So for you, like going from, I guess, print to digital, I mean, what was that transition like?
Well, obviously you could check on a job or a shoot. If you accidentally, you know, misexposed a roll of film or a really critical shoot, you could actually see if what you had. But it was also scary because the first raw files were called TIFFs, and so then you'd save them as TIFFs and you'd override your raw files, and there was a lot of bad file management at first. So that was the most challenging thing: file management. How do you back things up? And you know, hard drives were dinky back then, and you know, I think an 8. What was it?
Like megabytes.
Megabyte. It was like literally cards were tiny at the beginning, and $100 per gig for a long time, and it was preposterous. So
yeah.
Also, for a company like Patagonia that just literally had, you know, would hold our slides, and you know, if they held images, it was to transfer over to a system, because I have about, I don't know, 1,600 images in their archive, and they had to transfer everything from just physical slides to an archival system. And I think that was the hardest thing for everyone, is how do you keep track of your work? And I'm going through that right now because I have to update my portfolio again for, it's been 8 years. And I was like, you know, that's probably time.
So there's some images that you've taken that you probably have never seen again.
Oh yeah.
That hurts my heart.
Especially in the film world, that you'd lose, you know, a FedEx package was delivered of some sheets I'd submitted to a client magazine, and it got taken off my porch, and you just don't know, you don't really remember. And you know, if you have all these, like, you have scans, but we used to scan images at 600 by 800 pixels.
Oh wow.
And I have, you know, thousands of those thumbnails essentially, and that's all they are.
I mean, that's great for maybe Instagram, since they just down-res everything anyway.
Totally.
So
fair.
It's like, these are some great
Instagram
shots.
It's about the same size.
I feel like your Instagram is very curated though. I feel like you have a plan for it.
Yeah. I mean, I think I started that out as just the portrait series. I started that out as more of an accountability, because I have hundreds of those in the archive that I've never processed. And I just wanted to like start actually sharing those images, just to give myself some accountability to dig them out and to tell a little bit about the people that I encounter and those who inspire me. And so it was more of it's just a black and white type portrait, like with an 85, always shot at the same natural light. And it's just a way that I could have a project that I could take anywhere. And an event like this, I'm not someone to just, there's always all the, you know, grab a model and go take a photo. And I just, to me, it has to be a personal connection to the image. And so I really enjoy just being able to pull somebody aside and spend 3 minutes and grab a portrait.
And it's cool, this event too. I don't even know if a lot of people even understand like what this event is. How many have they done?
I think this is the fourth condo that was in person. Mm. Yeah, there were three before the pandemic, and this is the first in person since. This year is different. A lot of times they invite people from outside to take workshops, and this time it's only people that are either on the ambassadors or directly affiliated, like that have worked with Sony for some time. There are so many incredible people here of all genres of storytelling and content creation. And, you know, it's interesting too, because it runs the full age gamut too. And there's some older photographers walking around that a lot of the younger crew ignore, and they're complete legends. You know, I was like, do you know that guy shot Bob Marley in the 70s? And it just like blows people's minds, you know, and, or like that Neil over there shot that famous Muhammad Ali photo that, you know, they're sitting by themselves eating lunch. And I was like, always like, it's
right.
It's like, hey, you just go talk to that guy. He's a legend. Like Magnum photographer, Eli is a full Magnum.
And there's TikTokers with millions and millions and millions of followers. And it's like, oh, just nonchalant, just walking around. And it's really cool because of the way that they've kind of curated such an awesome community of people. The first condo was kind of what brought us to do our camera camp.
Yeah.
Because condo felt more focusing again with photographers. So we're like, well, what if we did something with the videos? I feel like they did a great crossover this time. So we're a little more accepted into the condo group.
It's true, but hopefully camera camp can still happen.
Oh, for sure. Definitely.
I mean, filmmaking to me is just as important as stills. And so I think it's really cool to see more of a blend of all the genres together.
Well, it's been 3 years since the last condo event, but it's like, even thinking about how much social media has shifted, it's like all these platforms want video. Has that impacted you at all? Or you're just like, no, I'm sticking with what I know. I'm not doing what the platform wants. I'm doing what I want.
If you want my opinion about the algorithm, I can.
You can, yeah,
this
sure.
Is, yeah.
It's, I mean,
we all probably feel the same about it.
No, being forced to do reels is not, I refuse. I mean, it's just, unless they change it back to where you actually get to see the things you want to see and your work gets seen. I mean, it's just when you're suppressed down to 1% of your following, it just doesn't even, there's no There's no point. There's no incentive anymore to post. And creating a reel for them is just fitting a box. And yep. I feel like that was really interesting in the NFT discussion about how, you know, it's having a place where you can actually support each other right. and support each other's work and not have it such a competitive space. And I find, you know, Instagram become more and more of it's unhealthy place to spend time. I use it more almost like I used to use Facebook. Was like, okay, just a way to keep in touch. It's the only way I have their number or whatever. So right. it's just a message. And now it's like a lot of people I'm connected on Instagram and I will use it for that. But unfortunately, it's the meta.
Thanks, Facebook.
But I mean, it is like a nice portfolio for you as well. So it's kind of like, look, here's my work. And I think you also might use it a little differently than like we do, where like that's our main, like one of our main sources of income too, is doing sponsored posts and things like that. And that also hurts because if we're not doing those reels and creating that type of content, it's like, well, then brands are gonna be like, well, why don't you have any views? I'm like, cause we just want to create the content that we want to create.
But I will say for a while there, I was like super into photography. I'm like, yeah, YouTube is great. Love making videos. But I was like, I want my feed to have the look. I want it to be all photography. I was loving editing pictures, but now I'm like, okay, I also love, I mean, we've been doing YouTube and stuff for like, well, you've been doing it forever, but like 12 plus years ago, we would just post such silly things online. So I'm like, okay, this is actually kind of a fun way to go back and kind of film, I don't want to say crappy content, but like I would never posted that 3 years ago, but now I'm like, okay, this is what the algorithm wants. And I'm actually having fun posting these silly little things that I normally wouldn't have posted. So I feel like there's pros and cons, but I do miss seeing my friends' like actual feeds and seeing their photos.
Did you guys know that you can click on the Instagram logo and change it to friends only, which I had absolutely no idea.
I mean, I just recently found that out.
And favorites too, you can, but then it's, you have to go through and actually manually select each person.
That's
and
too much.
It's too much work.
It's like MySpace top,
oh God.
Yeah, top 8. Seven, yeah, top 5. Oh man, so, how much time it took to like me agonize over who those,
I know.
Like, you're like, oh, stressful. Somebody's getting pushed out. Are they going to see this?
I know, they're going to see it. They're going to know. And then they changed it to like top 12, I think, at some point.
Oh, I don't know.
And then my MySpace got hacked and I don't even care anymore.
So was your LinkedIn.
My LinkedIn did get hacked too. Hmm. Do you use LinkedIn?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh. I don't use it to post really, but I use it to kind of stay in touch with a lot of people I work with because it's just a lot of people aren't on the other mediums now. So
it made quite a comeback, I feel like. Mm-hmm. I feel like everyone's into it.
I feel like LinkedIn.
I did two posts.
Whoa. Yeah. Whoa. Whoa. God, one, wait, should we like, I
one
don't know.
Was sponsored.
Yeah, do we need to like link to this?
I don't know.
The show notes.
No. This is great. Follow me on LinkedIn. No.
As far as like filmmaking goes, was Denali like your first film or have you done stuff before that? Or was that kind of like your kind of like eye opening moment of like, this is something?
I started in music and that was kind of my aha moment. I mean, my very first thing in the motion world was a music video that I shot on one of the little handy cams, and I still have the tape. I just found the little mini DV tapes in my slide cabinet, and I was like, oh, I still have those. It was a little thing about Ocean Plastics, ironically. My friend was really ahead of his time as far as talking about that in discussion, mm-hmm. and it was a really low-budge music video that I shot and edited, and right after that, I think, was when Canon 5D Mark II came out, because I shot Canon until I switched to mirrorless. And I was on tour with one of my friends, and I remember just running up the aisle being super excited. It was my first night on for this big tour run I was doing with him in the Crystal Ballroom in Portland, and I switched it to video because it just felt like I should do that as I pushed through the crowd up to the stage. And I remember looking at the back of the camera being like, oh, like, because seeing it with a prime beautiful lens, the thing you did not get with the other handycam formats, right. And did a couple music videos and some EPKs, like, you know, you'd be in the studio while they're recording and then create little like 1 minute pieces. And so that was kind of how I started with filmmaking. And then I'd done a few things before that, but Denali was really the breakthrough. Interestingly enough, that project started as something completely different. It was supposed to be a little commercial piece for, I think, like Snowpeak or something. And mm-hmm. it's just a little bio piece and kind of about the push-pull of the city versus nature, the mountains versus the ocean, and kind of that always feeling not being sure where I wanted to be. And Skip Armstrong, my friend who was the main DP on that, he's like, you know, your relationship with Denali, I see that, you know, there's a bond there, and I know that he's getting older, and so let's just maybe make it about you and your dog. And so Denali was literally on his last days, you know, and it was really emotional time, and I remember like holding on and be like, hey, can you just stick around for like this month.
I know, right?
And to the, I mean, it is uncanny how much dogs know. To the hour almost. It was like January 31st on midnight. He started getting his health started declining, that night. And you've been in Oregon coast in the winter months, and we got a beautiful 2 weeks of sunshine during that time. We were able to film everything and document this time with him, and it was really special. And so that alone was really, really incredible. But then it took a year and a half of like some failed edits that we pulled from music festivals. It was a whole different concept, very abstract, and I just wasn't getting personal enough. And so I finally was like, I need this to be relatable. Something won't let me go, that I can't give up on this mm-hmm. story. And I know there's something here, because a lot of my friends were just like, move on. You lost your friend, but just you need to move on from this. And I was like, we just have to finish this. And so it took like a year and a half to get the right tone. And Ben Knight, who edited it and narrated it, like he locked into a really thing. And when it came out, it was successful at the film festivals it was at, but I didn't know how the public would perceive it. The first day was, 5,000 views or something on Vimeo. And I was sleeping on my deck in Portland because it was hot out in the summer. And I remember turning on my phone at like 6 a.m. and it was like the Today Show and the London Times. It was like journalists from all over the world. And my phone was exploding. And by that night, it was like a million views. And then it was 8 million. And then Oprah put it on and everything. So it was like, it was this thing that was like, I didn't have an associate producer. I didn't have anybody helping me. It was just suddenly a news truck stalking my house. And I was like, what do I do? I lost my voice. And
on Vimeo. You had 8 million views.
Yeah.
Wow. Like,
in 1 week.
Wow. What year was this?
2005.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's incredible.
And yeah, and still, I think it's the number 2 video of all time on Vimeo. It has like 14 or 15 million views on Vimeo.
That's amazing. Did Vimeo send you like a plaque or something?
No.
Did they give you like a free account at least, maybe?
Come on, Vimeo. Vimeo, come on, get with it.
There were so many people putting up fake YouTube links that I threw one up there, because the whole thing was we didn't want to monetize it because we felt like it was a story that needed to be shared. And so I put up a YouTube link just to basically knock down all the other ones that had, there were fake ones that had almost a million views before I caught them. And the YouTube link, I think, has a few million views now too. And I think Outside TV had it on there too. And they won't tell me how many they have, but I'm sure they have like another 5 or 10 on there. So it was one of those things that just kind of, it was outside of, once it becomes out there, it's like, it really wasn't my story anymore. I got like 10,000 messages, and it was bizarre.
So what was it like dealing with like the viral hit moment? Because I feel like everyone kind of handles it differently. And then also kind of like after that is also like, what do I do now? Do I have to do a follow-up?
It was definitely overwhelming. And I had a lot of book publishers, and I felt like the sharks kind of circled for a while. There's like book publishers and people from the agents kind of writing me constantly being like, oh, let's cash in on this. And I had a friend who advised me. She's like, listen, if you're going to do anything, because there were Hollywood producers after it, but I just felt like they just wanted to cash in. They didn't have the right reason at heart at the time. And my friend said, you should put this in your own words first. I was like, well, I don't know anything about the book publishing world at all. I don't know how to navigate that. And the only person I knew was John Krakauer from the climbing world. He's had many major books published, and he called me back and was like, hey, if you have any interest in writing a book, now's the time, because it's really hard to have this much momentum. Here's my old editor who'd helped him with Into Thin Air and helped with Sebastian Younger's The Perfect Storm, and just on a lot of like major books that had been done. And Mark Bryant, he used to be at Outside Magazine, so mm-hmm. He was from that world too, and my world. And so he took me under his wing and just was almost like a father figure to me and helped me with the proposal. And I mean, it's like having mentors is everything in photography and filmmaking and writing too. So another woman wrote me who had done a short film that became that Hilary Swank movie, Freedom Writers. Mm-hmm. Basically, it was the same thing had happened to her. She put that short Nightline or Dateline, whatever. It was some short film out, and then all these people are calling her. And so she's like, hey, I know you're going to be just attacked by all these people that want some from you. Like, if you just call me and let me know. And my husband's a producer, and he'll help you vet people and just to see if they're good people in the industry. So
that's great.
I was really grateful to have that support, because I was just literally, after 75 interviews, I was just sitting there like, I don't have a clue what to say anymore. So being viral is like, obviously, I mean, you've experienced it too. It's a weird, all of a sudden you're under the spotlight for not the right reasons necessarily, and people have this idea of you. And
then you have to always try to follow up with it after, and then it's like hitting that peak again it's almost impossible. So I think you just kind of have to accept it.
Yeah.
That takes a long time to accept. And I think we met at Condo. You were finishing up your book, which is kind of crazy to think about.
That's crazy. I think I was still deep in trying to finish the book that mm-hmm. Condo. I think I had like a month left before my deadline.
Yeah, I think you were leaving events. You're like, I have to go write. Yeah, I was like, yeah, but there's cool stuff happening. Come hang out. You're like, I'm trying to finish a book right now.
Yeah, that was such a strange, and honestly, when you're writing a book, most of the time you're in some form of procrastination and you 100%. Actually really write like for 20 minutes a night. That took about 4 years from proposal to, because a proposal is basically you're writing an entire outline of the book plus a chapter or two. And I mean, it's a process. But the cool thing was, is right when I first started writing the proposal, I got Nori. And so after all of that attention for the film, the short film, I was almost like starting to doubt it, because I had so many messages come in, and just, it was this weird feeling. I was like, was that bond really that strong? Was this really, or is this all just this other thing now, and it's become, you know, overhyped? And having a puppy again and spending, you know, I was living, I just moved to the coast. I was so excited to be at the beach. It really a wonderful reminder of how, because quickly, you know, that bond forms so quickly with the dog, and see those mannerisms. And then over the time of it took to write the book, you know, Nori kind of, we became closer and closer. And I was living in my van again, which wasn't really a planned thing, but I built out a modern camping van with my dad. And it was my little office and studio while I was building the house. And I would park at the beach every day. So it was one of those things that, looking back on, seems so romantic. But at the time, it was pretty hellish.
Well, I think also, like, you see all the Instagram like van life and it's so curated. I'm like, none of that's realistic. When we did our road trip just in the Sprinter van, like, we were disasters.
Oh yeah, it was just mess, things everywhere. Even when I did like that one sponsored thing with T-Mobile, like, I had bruises because the cabinets were so like hard and like metal, and I would like get up to go to the restroom and then it like smacked me in the leg and I'm like, am I bleeding? So it's fun, but it's behind the scenes as dangerous.
Well, it's a lot of work. I've thought about writing another book, just calling it like Confessions of a Recovered Van Lifer or something.
Oh my God, people would love it.
Yeah, that would be pretty great.
I think so many people could relate.
So I have a question going back to Nori. Did you plan to get another dog, or was it just like you saw her and was like, well, this is my dog now?
I started being okay with the idea of it. I'd opened up. It took about a year and a half or longer. It was a while. Before I started thinking about it. And my partner at the time, she texted me a Pet Finder link, and I was just like, yeah, whatever. I opened the link, and it was these soulful puppy eyes with the same widow's peak and like eyeliner that Denali had, just like those eyes. I was just like, oh, I think I had to leave for the airport in like 5 minutes. And I wrote the longest email to the foster, because I was like, listen, I live at the coast. I know you say you need to have a home visit and all this stuff, but I live 2 hours away. Like, I'm coming right now. And the woman who ran the this amazing My Way Home dog rescue is out by Mount Hood. It was this really cool 10 acres. She usually took senior dogs and like dogs that were really hard to adopt. Nori's mom was a street dog, and all of them were picked up off the street. And so they were, got kind of just, it was a favor to take one of them in. And Cheryl had had breast cancer, and I guess my film Denali, like, because it was about cancer and had a bit of that story in there, she had really touched her during her time with, and it helped her a lot. And like, she called me immediately and I was like, listen, if you know, I'll be here waiting, like, you can like, and so it was one of those things where it all worked out. It wasn't planned really, but I think that's, I mean, just like anything in life, it's all the best opportunities and all the moments that are real true magical moments where you meet people, or you meet your partner, or you meet your dog. It's like people that like want to go on some speed dating thing in a humane society. Doesn't work that way. You need to have a true bond with that.
I think that's where we found Maddie I'm not sure if it was Pet Finder, but it was one of those websites. It was like, I actually agreed to do a sponsored video for this Pet Finder website. And I was like, I will absolutely not get a dog, but I think that, you know, adopting is great and I'll support it.
I was always pushing it. I'm like, you got a perfect yard for this. Get the dog.
And then I was searching and I saw this little litter of puppies, which also were like abandoned and left somewhere. And I was just like, oh my God,
we're going.
So we were in Utah. Was that where we were at? And then we like landed at like 6 a.m., went to a George Ezra concert in the afternoon, and then went to the shelter, saw that little dog full of just his own poo and pee. And he was disgusting.
Worms. I was like, this didn't weigh a pound because he was taken away way too early from his mom and was just a mess. We're like, we want that one.
That was our little rodent.
Yeah. He's an angel.
It's great. But yeah, dogs are just by far the most incredible thing.
When Cheryl ran the foster, her daughter really wanted to adopt Nori because she was so cute, but Nori had huge paws, and so she thought she was going to be like a 100-pound dog. Fortunately, Nori stopped at about 65 pounds, and I actually worked with her later for this one of the dog food companies, Still and Chewy's. We did a thing about adult dog adoption, and we were at My Way Home again, and Cheryl saw Nori and was like, told her daughter, like, you messed up.
Oh, she's no. Perfect.
I was like, I guess she adopted another dog that looked like she had tiny paws and it became 100 pounds.
Oh, anyway, so, my gosh.
So that's the thing about adopting a dog. You just don't really know. But that's the beauty of it, too. So.
You don't. They told him he was like a poodle Maltese. There's not a bit of Maltese in that dog at all. We got his DNA test, of course. So I guess after the film, then sort of, I mean, what was your like aspirations? Like, what did you really want to do?
I mean, that definitely brought up a lot of opportunities because a lot of people wanted to tell stories that were more heartfelt and connected that way. And I did a couple films with my friend, Daniel Norris, who's a baseball pitcher currently for the Tigers, and did one about a conservationist, Doug Peacock, for Peak Design. For me, it's about telling meaningful stories. But then I realized that if I was going to write the book, it needed to be something far deeper. And it's challenging to tell that much about the not so pretty sides of life. But I feel like I know for myself with social media, when you just see all the polished sides of everybody's so-called lives, it just makes you feel bad about yourself. And so I did realize the only way I was going to be able to help people and make them truly relate to the real stuff that happens in life is to share some things, you know, about mental health. And actually even I've gotten a lot of messages about like being a very shy kid. I mean, I'm definitely an introvert, but I love people. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's one of those things. And I had to learn how to kind of come out of my shell for events like this where there's 200 people. You just want to talk to everybody.
It's a lot. I know. Yeah. Yesterday, like I got back to my room and I'm like, I don't know how to relax right now. Cause I just talked to like 200 people for 12 hours. Yeah. And I'm like the same. I'm like, I thought I wasn't, you know, an extrovert, but I'm like, nope, I like being home, but like, I also like talking to people, but I'm also like, oh, I need to like recharge. And I'm like, so yeah, it's a lot, but it's so nice. And I feel like everyone here, not everyone, but I feel like it's like we all kind of are like that. Like we all just hide behind our cameras and we're all just like into the same thing. So we're all, you know, we have a lot of things to talk about, but I don't know.
It's funny how many people have told me that here that they're like, they're actually are introverts. People I wouldn't expect. Like last night, Steve Sweatpants was like, oh yeah, man, I'm a total introvert. Mm-hmm. Like this is a lot for me.
And yeah.
That's the importance of like when I had my van, it was my little nest and my little retreat. I could write, you know, I'd be at the beach, but it'd be people swirling around, but I would just be in there writing. And then now having a home, I built it with a lot of sound insulation and making rooms feel really private. And so even though we can host a big group of people and a lot of guests, it's still, you can tuck away and have your little quiet moments. And for me, that's what I need. I need my little den to just kind of recharge and then I'm all set. And
yeah, definitely. I mean, even like last night, everyone's like, come on out, we're doing Astro. I was like, I'm in bed, it's 9 o'clock. Like, I got to go to sleep.
I know, and then I spent 2 hours on TikTok scrolling, but I was like, you know what, this is my time. So I want to talk about Rivian. Unless you don't want to.
Oh, yeah, let's.
Oh, let's.
I love Rivian. I have the R1S pre-ordered, and you've been doing some work with them for quite some time now, right?
Yeah, the executive creative director who just actually left, he was there for 10 years, he reached out on Instagram via his personal account that had no link to Rivian and wrote me this little cryptic little message about this amazing adventure electric truck company, and it sounded like a complete scam. Honestly, I almost deleted it and I kind of
blocked.
I was like, so what's the range? And he's like, oh, up to 400 miles, which is gonna be the max pack coming out later. But, and I was like, huh, now you have my attention. And because at the time it was all the vehicles had like 2 inches of clearance and, mm-hmm. you know, there's really, you could not take anything off road. It took me about 3 months before I realized it was real because we had all these presentations and it was in these empty white conference rooms and I just was like, this does not sound real. And then my reps in New York and I from RXR, we decided to just take a leap. We went to Detroit or to Plymouth where the design headquarters were, and we walked in there and I saw all the renderings first, and then I turned around the corner and there was the full-size clay models and I was like, oh, I want that. If that really gets made, I want that. It wasn't only a truck, it was a truck that had a class to it, but it was also very rugged. You know, you could tell it could go off road. And I shot stills on the official launch video, and then we did a lot of like little stories. And then they did a story about me. We did a film up in Tofino and Vancouver Island, and it was with a few of my surf buddies, Jeff Johnson, who is another, he was in that film 180 South. He directed that, and so it was more about my story. And we took one up there and ended up going kind of deep on the whole cancer experience and making it more like a kind of, not a serious film, but more of a in-depth, intimate look into who I am now. And RJ, the CEO and founder of Rivian, he's like, listen, like we could put the Rivian logo at the end, but if this is about Ben, this is about Ben's story. He's like, let's take the logo off the end and promote his book. And I was like, whoa, this is, you know, like no commercial clients ever asked to take their logo off something.
Right.
I mean, the truck was obviously in it. It was one of the really nice blue ones, the bright blue ones, but
oh,
But it was that to me, I mean, RJ's just a really, he has three boys and he's just a really heartfelt founder, and it really trickles down because you can feel the thought that goes into everything. And I've met so many of the designers and they've hired a lot of my friends, including my friend Ian Durkin, who's was the judge at the first film festival Denali came out at. He was at Vimeo at the time. He was a staff picks guy.
Oh, that's amazing.
And so now he
full
helps.
Circle.
And there's a lot of his whimsical humor in there too, the gear guard, you know, that when it comes up and it's like
we love the gear guard. Yes. It's so cute.
He's so
when it,
cute.
When it popped up, I was like, it's so cute. Oh my God. Yeah. We love the gear guard. That's like the one thing.
Yep.
Ian was at our house with his partner like a couple weeks ago, and he showed me the original video that he showed for the inspiration for that, where he like came up from behind a countertop with a Super 8 and like then scanned back and forth and then slid back under.
That's
it.
Amazing.
And that's incredible. Yeah. We appreciate the gear guard.
Yeah,
it's very
thoughtful.
I love
the gear guard, and I love the pet mode too. I mean, pet mode's incredible for having dogs.
I saw it on, I think, your story or something, and I was like, what? I was like, this is amazing, because we did get to test out the R1S 4 or 5 months ago. We did a road trip, so that was before the update.
And you were kind of like the first too.
We were. So I believe they said we were like the first people outside of the CEO and the, you know, high up people who had the opportunity. And I said, are you sure?
When I saw you had one for real, I was like, how did you get that?
And we couldn't talk about it for a month. Yeah. We waited like a month as well. And it was incredible. I mean, we met so many people, and I was like, I felt like, I don't know. I was like, it felt like it's a secret, but we were in Yosemite where that's all anybody wanted to talk about. So I was like, yeah, I don't blame you. It's pretty cool.
And I feel like because you had several other vehicles and you basically got rid of all of those. And now that your truck is the main thing that you have, right?
Yeah. I had my van, a commuter that I would run back and forth to Portland and for the airport, and then I had a beach truck, and it was just nice to be able to just go back to one. I actually was on the film team that went on the Transamerica Trail with Motor Trend, was with them, and they drove from Outer Banks, North Carolina, all the way to the Oregon coast.
Oh, wow.
On back
That's
roads
awesome.
And like 4,400 miles, I think it was, and all like, you know, a lot of really critical off-road stuff. And so we met up with them in like Moab and Oregon and Georgia and Outer Banks. And I used to subscribe to Motor Trend when I was a teenager, and I knew how harsh they could be on vehicles, and to see how excited they were about the vehicle from day one was pretty mind-blowing, just because these are the journalists that see everything, you know. And then they gave it Truck of the Year, but I still, until I had one of my own, I didn't know if it would deliver on that. And it's just incredible. It's incredible. It's crazy fast. If you put it in sport mode, it handles like a small sports car on windy mountain roads. And then on the beach or off road, it makes you feel like a hero because you have so much control. I grew up in Michigan on dirt roads and stuff, and it's really easy to get a truck fishtailing or any vehicle, but because you have the center of gravity so low and even throughout the entire platform, it's so predictable and it has a lot of clearance.
Yeah.
So
did you get to try the R1S yet?
I drove the original prototype. So those are all hand built, and so they're just not as tight as the production models. So
well, whenever I get mine, we're gonna go out of our way, but we're gonna road trip back up to Oregon so we can have the R1T and the R1S meet up, and you can drive mine. But I feel like you'll probably be able to get your hands on one before then.
And I have a pre-order for one as well.
Okay, there
we,
you go.
If we get one first, I'll drive down to you.
Yeah,
guys.
There we go. You probably pre-ordered way before me. I think mine was like November.
Well, I switched. I've had a pre-order for a long time, but I switched it from because I had it as an R1T, so I switched it over to an S as soon as they were available.
Gotcha. So maybe I'll take my regular car up there to see your R1S if you get it first.
But it's, what color do you get?
I have the Rivian Blue as of now.
I pre-ordered the white.
Yeah.
The white is just so fresh.
Classy. It is, but they're also, there's so many good colors, but I think the Rivian Blue is what I'm probably going to stick with.
We went with limestone.
The limestone is so nice.
It's nice.
It's kind of like it's not gray, it's not, I don't know, it has a really nice natural feel to it.
There's one where I live, it's the limestone truck, and I'm like, ooh, like every color looks good. Yeah. I keep changing my mind every day at this point.
Yeah. Even the yellow looks great.
Yes. I know. Yeah. I was like, it looks so cool.
I'm not a yellow car vehicle, but when Me I saw either. One, I was like, that is badass.
Yeah. But I will say it does have like the yellow accents. So I'm like, okay, you do get like a little bit of the yellow if you don't get the full yellow vehicle. So I'm like, okay, maybe I'll just stay with the blue.
You're with the launch edition, that's the only launch edition that has the yellow accents. Yeah.
Oh. My heart is crushed.
Oh, you're crushed.
I'm getting a spray paint can and I'm spraying something. I guess we were testing the launch
edition. We were. Well, which was crazy. It was still a pre-production one that we had.
It was.
So it was interesting because as a Tesla owner, it's really a poor quality. Like this Tesla, like, I mean, very expensive vehicle. I'm like, stuff is always going wrong.
Oh.
And so I thought for sure testing out a pre-production model of a vehicle that is like their first, you know, foray into the SUV space. I was like, we had like no problems at all.
No. And like, yeah, I thought we were going to, you know, have software issues. There was like one small thing where it was like, you can fix that with an update. But other than that, like the maps were great. Everything was just so smooth.
And every update's been, you know, every little like things that I've noticed, but then things that I wouldn't even have thought of, you know, obviously the pet mode is a big one. But the new one that's coming out, I think this week, is the camp mode, which, you know, you have, it goes from 9 inches to 15 inches of clearance. So you can fully level your vehicle and then put the vehicle to sleep. So you can only have the plugs on or something. So you don't have all those, you know, like lights coming on or like, you know, sounds coming on or whatever. You can just basically put it to sleep. And it's my first electric vehicle, but to have something that the one or two times that something has gone wrong, you just like reset it. And it's like your phone glitches. So you just reset it and it works perfectly after that. And it's with a gas vehicle, it means you're getting towed or
exactly. Yes. And I think it's also cool. Just, you can suggest things. Like if there's a need for it with enough people, it's like they can make a software update and you basically have an all new vehicle, which is so impressive.
Now I really want it again. Like when I had to give it back, it was a sad day. Hopefully soon.
It reminds me of the first time I had, I mean, I haven't had an iPhone. It's just like, it gets out of the way, does everything well and doesn't, you don't really think about it until I get in. If we still have an old Bronco and I had to move it the other day, just, or I drove it to my parents or something. And I was like, what is this archaic thing? And, you know, or just even, you know, Sophie's Subaru. I was just like, I don't know how to drive this. Everything is so clunky and different. So.
That's how I felt going back. Cause I still have like a Range Rover. So going back after driving for a week, the Rivian, I was like, how do I drive? Because you have like the one pedal, and I was like, "Oh my, okay, no,
you
now
I need to hit the brakes."
Yeah, like, "Oh my god, I need to hit the brakes." I'm like, "This is, I'm a hazard on the street right now."
Guys driving like jacked up 4x4 trucks pull me over and be like, "What is this? This is the coolest truck." And then they hear it's American made, and you know, then they're like, "Who makes it?" I was like, "It's a Rivian, but who makes it? Like Tesla? Does Tesla make it? No, Rivian. It's a Rivian."
I know. I'm like, "No, Rivian." They're like, "Well, who?" I'm like, "Rivian."
You probably when you were, you know, the same, in Yosemite, I bet you had.
And I'm like, just look it up, and they're like, like, how do you spell that? And I'm like, when I first saw that, I was like, oh my God. I'm like, just when I didn't think he could get any cooler, I'm like, Ben is working with Rivian. And have you been to the Venice Hub? I'm sure you've been to the Venice Hub. Yeah, it's so really cool. Like all the art and all the pictures. And I just love how it's like an experience.
Yeah,
like,
they have a lot of workshops for kids and things. Yeah. And it's they have usually two of the vehicles there plus a few test drive vehicles. And so, you know, you can actually interact with them and everything, which... That's the hard part, is like, where do I get one of these? Well, you just literally go on your phone and you can order it. And
shows up.
Tesla, it's very similar. But
so what's next? What's next for you?
Really just want to start focusing on telling some good stories again. I did do a film in Iceland this winter with one of my really dear friends, Ben Sturdaluski, we call Sturge. It was a snow surf music film. And my really good friend, Griff, who is known as Goth Babe, he went with us as well. And so we were with some of the athletes and I was shooting surfing in like 34 degree water. And
oh my gosh.
It was an experience, but it's like a 20 minute short that comes out at Banff this fall. And I'm excited for that just because it was so fun to, it wasn't completely my project, but it was just a fun collaboration. And at the new place, we built an edit bay and got to all like sit and edit in that new space, and which is all sound treated now, and it just feels really good. And writing the book, going through the pandemic, and building the house, it just feels good to finally be settling in and even have the opportunity to think about what's next. And so I always say that as long as I'm working with people that I am inspired by and I care about and telling stories that are meaningful, I'm happy.
For sure. Yeah, I feel like you had a crazy past 3 years with building the truck, and of course everyone had the pandemic, which is kind of crazy because like how did that affect you as far as like work wise?
I was on book tour in January, so the book dropped January like 14th or something. I did, you know, a few TV and bookstore events, and then did one run of Patagonia stores, which was really fun. And I came home to take a break and then was going to figure out like to actually build the tour out, and I was going to do a show in San Diego. My really good friend started that hard kombucha brand Juneshine, and they have a really cool facility there, and we were going to do a screening. And I remember we were on the phone, Forrest and I, and I was like, should we do this? And it was like March 13th or something. He goes, we don't really know what's going on here. It doesn't seem to be affecting us here, but I think we probably should just call it. And literally like the next week I lost an entire year of work. It was like all the book tour, all the speaking engagements, all the Rivian projects we were going to do, it was just wiped. And so I think we were all on the same boat that way, and here was this house that was half built that I was like, okay, I gotta figure out how to finish this thing. And so it was an interesting experience, but I feel like, I don't know, there's something about being forced to go back to square zero and rethink everything and what priorities are was really the benefit of that, and realizing how much our friendships and true connections mean, you know, like the in-person. Because, I mean, you can Zoom call all you want, and it's nice to keep in touch.
Right.
But there's nothing like sitting in the same room with someone to have the actual conversation and connection.
Do you remember when everything was just like a normal phone call? Like, before the pandemic, like, there were no video calls. I mean, maybe few, but it's like you would do like a conference call.
Yeah.
You know, and now everything is video, which I kind of like it.
I don't mind for the meetings. So it's like not having to fly to the other coast to, like one meeting is amazing.
But. For sure. But I'm like 4 years ago, 3 years ago, I'm like, oh my God, like we would just have like a dial in code, you know, like, do, 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 do.
Yeah, you'd all talk over each other. You'd be like yelling and like, can't hear anybody. And, you know.
Yeah. Now it's like, nope, it's all video, which I do prefer.
Thank you so much for being on our podcast. This was such a fun chat. And back at the place that we all met, which is so fun. Yeah. So I guess where can everyone find you? And of course, you guys definitely have to check out his book and Denali, the short film. So where can they find you at?
On Instagram, I'm Ben_Moon. On Twitter, just Ben Moon. And on Vimeo, you can just look up Ben Moon on Vimeo and Denali, the short film. If you haven't seen it, you might shed a tear or two, but it's happy tears.
You will cry.
You will. You will and, shed a couple.
The book is called Denali, A Man, A Dog, A Friendship of a Lifetime. And it's on Penguin Books. So. Awesome. And I read the audiobook as well. I narrated it. So if you prefer that format.
I might have to go and listen to the audiobook now because I read the one that you'd sent me like an early copy of it. So I'm going to have to go listen to the audiobook.
Yeah, I didn't know. Okay, that's a good tip. All right, I'm going to check that out too. Awesome.
I remember when you read it because Jenna told me she's never going to read it. Wasn't it layover or something?
It took me a very long time. Some animals, this. Oh.
Oh my God, I'm going to cry just thinking about it. I think I read it on, we had, it was one flight and we had a delay. It was, oh my God. Yeah. I finished. I was like crying.
I was
on
like, I'm not emotionally ready yet.
I was wrecked, but it was incredible.
It's so good. Yeah.
Jenna was like, yeah, Justine's a hot mess. And so
I was just like, I'm like, this is why
it's happy tears. I promise.
I have to do it in private. Yeah. But
no, oh my God,
incredible.
I'm gonna cry thinking about it.
So make sure you guys check it out. And, you know, like I said, once I get the Rivian, I'm driving up there and we will be reconnecting because I know where you live. So I'll just park out in front and probably use your charger. So
there you go.
I've invited myself.
Do you have one of the chargers installed?
I've just been using the mobile charger or the travel one, and it works fantastic too. But the wall charger thing is coming with the SUV. So.
Oh, that's exciting.
Great. Yeah. That'll work for me. Thank you so much in advance.
Well, thank you again. And yeah, we'll see you guys in our next podcast episode. We're back.
We're back.
Woo!